Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio and the Cosmic Citizen. My name is Paula Thompson. I'm your host, and with me are my four dear friends and co-hosts, Andre Rodatis, Pamela Chaddock, Chuck Thurston, and Marvin Gowron. Hi, you guys. Good morning.
Hi, Paula.
Hi,
Paula. Good morning, Paula.
Hi.
Good morning, all. Yeah.
It's always so good when we can all be on together. I just love it. Yay. So, you know, it is snowing here, which is nice. We need the moisture, and it rained all night, and that's nice, too. Sorry for our friends in California that are getting dumped on right now so hard, but it sure is nice to get a little moisture. It's been terribly dry here anyway. Yeah. Everybody well this morning? We're all well and good. Welcome to our friends on the board, Roy, Isadora, Gary, Pam. I see you're on there too. you do a good job monitoring the chat room for us, Pam. Thank you so much.
Yeah, sun hanging
really
out.
Appreciate that. It is. Sometimes there's a lively conversation that goes on there. Other times it's just people listening, you know, which is fine. But yeah, so everyone good today? Everything going well?
Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah,
pretty good.
Yeah. Marvin,
pretty good.
I know
here.
You have an announcement. You got the homecoming coming up tomorrow again.
Yeah. We're it's interesting. It's a bit of a stamina run, but it's an enjoyable one. You know, every Sunday morning. So tomorrow we've got the theme is spiritual. The theme is parent-child relationship with God, the foundational spiritual gift. And the focus is, you know, I mean, it's without that gift of having made us and entering into sustaining relationship with us, not much else can happen. You know, it's really the basic gift, the fundamental gift that God has given us that is soul-saving. So, that's our theme. We're going to have a lot of fun, Elizabeth and I, exploring it, and anyone else who shows up.
Elizabeth Callahan, right? And
yep.
this is a ministry of, or sponsored by, let's say, Urantia University Institute.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I just wanted to say that if you want to get to the homecoming worship, it's pretty easy. You just go to UrantiaUniversity.org, and it shows up right on the home page. Am I correct about that?
Actually, it's under events, and then you'll see
under
homecoming.
Events.
Yeah, and then you'll see homecoming. And the best thing is just to get on the news, the email list. Just check the box on the things you'd like to receive, and then you get something in your email box right that morning with a link and everything.
Right, and you can find, just a plug for Urantia University, you can find the cafes there, and everybody who attends Urantia University's cafes or love them. I hear nothing but good things about them. And so, you know, it's definitely a site you want to go to and peruse, I think. And wonderful classes are offered, and it's a great effort. How long has it been going on now, Andre? Since 2010?
Yeah, we've had our cafes are coming up on our fourth anniversary next month.
Wow.
You know, we started them at the beginning of COVID-19 pandemic. And they've been going on ever since. I just hosted a cafe last night on the foundations of religious faith, sections 4 and 5. In 2 weeks, I'll continue that series with 6 and 7. So with certainty and certitude, you know, of faith and the divine. So
there's a little bit of background noise, too, just
we have that audio signature that tells people we do not do this for money.
If we we'd have a producer.
we cannot be accused of perfection.
No, we can't. We cannot.
There's a great quote in the foreword about
trying.
Yeah, we can be accused of trying and having fun. It is fun. But, yeah, we can't be accused of perfection. You remember that great quote in the foreword about perfection in some aspects? Or that one always strikes me as being,
right.
Last one, that's us.
Yeah. Imperfection in all aspects. Absolutely.
Oh, it is in all aspects.
I think we're at the very bottom of the list, right? We're perfection in practically nothing.
Yeah, right. But that's okay. I mean, you know, it gives you a something to shoot for. Here it is, right here. I'll just read it for kicks. This is from the foreword, and it's from section 0, paragraph 1. It says, when we attempt to conceive of perfection in all phases and forms of reality, we encounter 7 conceivable types. 1, perfection, absolute perfection in all aspects. 2, absolute perfection in some phases and relative perfection in all other aspects. 3, absolute, relative, and imperfect aspects in varied association. 4, absolute perfection in some respects, imperfection in all others. 5, absolute perfection in no direction, relative perfection in all manifestations. 6, absolute perfection in no phase, relative in some, imperfect in others. And 7, absolute perfection in no attribute, imperfection in all.
Whoa.
I think that's us, right?
What a list. What a list. Has anybody put together a list that says the example of the creatures that belong to those individual categories?
Ooh, that would be an interesting study.
I don't think anybody has attempted that I've seen. Has anybody else seen that?
I have never seen that. And we know that Trinity is number one, right? The Father,
right.
The Son, and the Infinite Spirit. They're number one. That goes without saying, right? But those are
we can imagine many that are perfect in all aspects, you know, but
mm-hmm. right.
it's these relative
right.
ones that are mm-hmm. evanescent.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. And we know
they
the first and the last. That's interesting.
Yeah. You know,
we know
they
that God is
example,
the first and we're the last.
You know, of ourselves at mid-third stage spirit status, once we've left Uversa and are allowed to go to Avona, they indicate we have perfection in just one aspect, perfection of purpose.
Ooh.
So that
oh,
would
wow.
be... That would be an indication of perhaps, you know, that relative or absolute perfection even in just one aspect and imperfection in all others or something. But that would be one that you could look at.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
That's interesting to think about, Andre. You know, that when I think about purpose, it's such a fundamental reality in our lives. You know, it's what we want. It's our motivations. It's what we are reaching for. And it's really interesting to think that our sense of purpose, even our sense of purpose, even if we've chosen God, is really very ill-developed down here. We barely have an idea of what it is we're supposed to want and reach for in this life. We're so primitive. I keep coming back to the word embryonic, you know. We're so ill developed, so it's like it takes us from here to Havona just to get really clear and right in what it is we want, our
right.
purpose. You know, it's really
yeah.
interesting.
Sure.
But I think in a way you learn to just go with it. It's okay, and you realize that the universe isn't expecting it. You know, God is not expecting it. None of our big brothers and sisters up there are expecting us to be perfect. It's us that expect each other to be perfect. That's what's interesting to me. You know, our own expectations are what we trip over, what we stumble over. But, you know, the universe is like, well, kids, you know, you're where you are, and we're here to help. Don't get too tangled up in it, you know, to just keep trying. And the book reiterates that in so many places, that it's not so important as what we are, as what we're becoming. You know, it's not what mind desires to be, but what it strives to be, you know, or it's not something like that. I'm probably getting those quotes
wrong. I think
wrong,
that applies with perfection. I mean, where do we see perfection? I mean, we certainly don't see absolute perfection. Anywhere I can think of. So, you know, maybe, well, I don't know. I could only speculate. But I think as we ascend, you know, get into the matching worlds and beyond, we're going to start to see what perfection actually looks like. And I think that's going to increase
yes.
our desire for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think what they're trying to do for the moment is just whet our appetites or encourage us to consider that there is this potential or this possibility. It's maybe beyond our reach now. And all we're trying to do now is just cultivate a desire for it. But even that is hard.
Right.
Because
wow.
you know,
oh,
we
yeah.
have many
we haven't
examples
seen
of even what it looks like.
We haven't.
Yeah.
Right.
And there's people out there
at
who
least
criticize these. If you see it as a perfectionist, you're like being a perfectionist has become a negative.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's what I'm kind of wondering what it might be like because they talk about over-revelation. You know, it's almost like being in the presence of super perfected beings might be very intimidating. And you know, I of course that's from a human perspective. It might be totally different. You know, we have a mansion world perspective, but you know what I'm saying? I guess I picture myself down on my knees with my head in my hands the whole time around all that perfection. It's like so humbling,
you know,
so overwhelming, you know.
Well, you
I've
know,
always
I,
thought
I,
that if we were transported right now to a world settled in light and life, which is the apex of perfection for a material world, right? So the Adam and Eve, the perfect human beings that have evolved over eons of time, and now they've reached what the UB calls, you know, the flower of evolution, and a blessed age, completely blessed with this glory. And if we were transported there right now, we would think we were in the heaven of our traditions. And I think, wow, if I was transported there right now, I would be so naked in my imperfection. And that would not be a comfortable experience, right? I mean, it would be nice to go there invisibly and just observe what perfection looks like, but I wouldn't want to be seen.
You could just sit there perfectly?
Yes, I want to be a lurker.
I mean, I'm afraid I'd become a spectacle.
Yes.
Nobody wants that. That's the other side of it.
Angels are enjoying this conversation. They're getting tickled by this.
Yeah. Well, it is mercy that we don't get there before we're ready, right? That we don't get to be, you know, the deaf, dumb, and blind, naked and ugly individual on paradise that is, what are they doing here?
Who left here? Clean that up right away.
They're not ready. They're not ready. This doesn't belong on paradise. No.
But eventually we do.
But eventually
we do.
There you go. Oh. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, and when God looks at us, he sees perfection in potential. Go ahead, John.
Oh, your comment, Pam, a minute ago reminded me of what it's like to learn a new skill, like learning to play an instrument, for example. I've had instances of this where you're working at it, and you're working at it, and you think you're getting pretty good, right? And then you hear someone play who has real mastery of the instrument.
Oh yeah,
and you're just like aghast. Just stunned. Yes. You had idea it could sound like that. No idea it could sound like that. And
you realize that your appreciation is perfect, but your skill.
Yes.
Well, yeah. Get a realization of what it's going to take to get to that level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how much practice, how much whatever it is.
That's such a good point.
Yeah.
To achieve that kind of mastery.
Do you think that can work against you in terms of discouraging you? I guess it could go either way.
Yeah,
it could encourage you or discourage you. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I think maybe I'll give up the oboe. It was probably par for three or something. I don't know.
Photography, Chuck, you're very good at that.
No, I'm not. I'm just making that up. But that thought washes over you. You know, could I ever get anywhere close to that?
See, I had that experience as a young person in high school, and I went to career day, and I really wanted to be an artist. All my life, I wanted to be an artist. And it worked. It was a double whammy because one year I went and saw a professional artist, and the next year I went and listened to a professional actor. And both times, I sincerely was into both of those crafts. With all my heart, I was. And the first time I just see the work of this artist, I said, oh, my God, I'll never be that good. Mm. And then the next time when I went and listened to, his name was Bill McHale, and he owned the Country Dinner Playhouse in Denver, which was a wonderful dinner playhouse. And I had been there many times, and even more than art, acting was my passion. And he said, if you want to stand in soup lines, go ahead and be an actor. You know, it's interesting how both of those things served to dissuade me. And he said, and then Dame Judith Ray from Loretto Heights College came, and she said, the best students I've ever had in 30 years of teaching never made it past the wings of Broadway. And man, that hit me like a ton of bricks. She also said, if you don't mind being rejected, because you're going to get rejected a lot. And I thought, oh boy, maybe not for me. So interesting how that, you know, when you're faced with someone who has taken that craft and just tried to hone it to perfection, and they tell you, wow, this is a tough road. You can get discouraged. Yeah. Maybe that's why we're not transported to that world in life. We come back and think, well, forget about it. We're never going to get this.
This conversation reminds me of that. Sorry.
Well, just to mention. But just to mention the passage about long before reaching Havona, you know, we learned to feast upon uncertainty, fatten upon disappointment, etc. I always think about that. I mean, what they're saying is all the way up, we're going to have this experience of trying, succeeding sometimes, failing sometimes. And they're saying, look, you just have to get more hardy. You have to get – and for me, it's all, you know, when things get messed up these days, finally, I'm able to actually chuckle and laugh at it and say, well, you know, welcome to this state of affairs. You know, this is humanity. Right. This is who we are. We are perfecting. We're not there. And so, like, that's just part of the journey. Right. And you take you got to take it in good nature. Otherwise, you get so bent out of shape that you're unable to proceed. You're unable to continue to make progress, which is – that's not good, you know. Then there's trouble. So they talk about a sense of humor as being really critical to dealing with imperfection, and I can relate.
It reminds me of this comment from Rodin, which you're all familiar with, I'm sure. Where he says that life is not real to one who cannot do some one thing well. Certainly. Skill is one of the real sources of the satisfaction of living.
Mm-hmm.
I've given a lot of thought to that over the years.
I find that to be true, don't you?
Yeah, ability is that which you inherit, while skill is what you acquire. Because life is not real to one who cannot do something, do some one thing well. And I think that's really true. In terms of having a sense of identity, having a role to play in the world, having something you can offer as a service.
The satisfaction comes from the fact that you think you're pretty good at it. Don't you think? I mean, because there will always be critics in the world who will never like what you do. But as long as you feel good about it, that's the satisfaction right there.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I did that pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's satisfaction.
You have to be honest with yourself.
True.
And
feedback is important. Right. No participation.
But part of it is... Yeah, right. You have to choose something that really is somehow harmonious with your nature, or that is exciting.
Right.
Somewhat achievable. Aspect of it. Yeah.
Right. And if you have an aptitude,
that helps to make it achievable. If you're excited about it, or if you enjoy doing it.
Oh, for sure.
That really helps a lot.
Right.
Because you're never going to reach those higher levels.
How frustrating it must be for someone to feel like they have to do something that someone else thinks they should do, right?
Yeah,
but they have no aptitude
for
it. You know, how frustrating that must be. But Pam, you posted a great quote, and people on the board are saying, what am I faced? Go ahead and read that one, because we briefly read it or quoted it, but
yes,
the whole quote
Marvin,
is so sublime.
Marvin brought it up, and so it's Paper 26.5.3, that then is the primary or elementary course which confronts the faith-tested and much-traveled pilgrims of space. But long before reaching Havona, these ascendant children of time have learned to feast upon uncertainty, to fatten upon disappointment, to enthuse over apparent defeat, to invigorate in the presence of difficulties, to exhibit indomitable courage in the face of immensity, and to exercise unconquerable faith when confronted with the challenge of the inexplicable. Wow. Mm. Da, 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 da. Long since the battle cry of these pilgrims became in liaison with God, nothing, absolutely nothing is impossible.
Love that
one. And I wonder what that last line really means. In liaison with God, nothing, absolutely nothing, is impossible.
That's mm-hmm. their battle cry.
What is hidden in that last line?
Absolutely nothing.
Well, you know, the implication that for me is always associated when I see a line like that, that is an absolute, and talking about us who are so finite, what always
so
comes
imperfect.
To me is, well, yeah, what always comes to me is that only makes sense in the light of an eternal life going forward.
Yes.
That it's, nothing's impossible if we have an eternal time frame, that there will always be something out ahead that we have not yet accomplished, but that we can strive for. And that state, they tell us, will never really come to an end for us.
I think that's such a good point, Marvin.
Yeah.
And that's why they could say that long since. They've long since learned. You know, because they've had plenty of experience now with defeat, with failure, and they've overcome all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
I mean,
there's
the
matter
of the non-doable. The non-doable
well,
is not possible.
It's especially, for me, it's especially important to keep the eternal perspective when we run across that statement where it says, be you perfect, even as the Father in heaven is perfect. And mm-hmm. and when I first encountered that, because we all know, we've all experienced at many points in life a profound sense of how imperfect, how ill developed we all are, and when you see an imperative to like, this is your goal, you need to be perfect like God in heaven is perfect, it can be a little disconcerting. the distance is so huge, but for me, as I read the revelation more and more, it became really clear to me the only way that statement makes sense is to put it in the eternal time frame, that the perfection is something we will be reaching for forever, and we're gonna make what's the word? We reach accomplishments along the way, like perfection of purpose that Andre
milestones.
Was talking
oh,
about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, milestones, plateaus.
Exactly.
Yeah, milestones.
Yeah, exactly. So we have to be patient with ourselves while we reach for the perfection. Mm-hmm. We have to be really proportional and patient, and we have to really allow ourselves to feel loved the way God loves us so that we don't get discouraged, That, to me, is the heart of it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In that list from the forward, they do include relative perfection.
Yeah.
So I think that we can certainly strive for relative perfection. I can be better at it today than I was yesterday.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
And that's something. There's satisfaction in that. There's significance in that. So
there is satisfaction
that.
In that. And they say that you can only see growth in retrospect, right? And so I think that's inherent in that. You can look back and say, "Wow, yeah, I have improved. I've gotten better over time." Roy on the board said, "Gamers are the only one here that fits that." That quote that Pam just read, and Roy, I think that's such an interesting statement because it has long occurred to me that the Paradise Ascent is like a really good video game where, you have to work really hard to master one level and then you finally, if you beat it, you get to go to the next one. Of course, that game ends eventually if you win the game ultimately. But Mm-hmm. But with life, game on, Pam says.
Yeah.
Game on.
Are any of you familiar with Malcolm Gladwell, the author? Malcolm Gladwell.
I have read.
The Tipping Point and some other books.
Oh, that's an important book.
Yeah.
It's called Outliers, where he kind of made a study of success. You know, he went and looked at individuals who have achieved prominence in their field, tremendous success, and try to figure out what the factors were behind that and what made them different maybe from others. But one of the things that he came up with out of that is that it takes 10,000 hours to get good at something, whatever it is, whether it's programming or being a musician or artist or whatever. So the people he studied, because a lot of people just pop onto the stage as a full-blown success, you know, and you think, wow, did they just do that, like, since yesterday? You know, and it's, no, that's never the case. There's usually a tremendous amount of time put in developing whatever.
10,000 hours.
The people, you don't see that. You don't see that part of it. But, you know, use the Beatles as an example. They had this gig where they just played all day, every day. This was before anybody had ever heard of them. I don't know if it was some kind of a dance club or something. But
they were in Hamburg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got to play all day, every day. That went on for a long time, and they got good as a result.
I remember hearing the story of Thomas Alva Edison. You know, the inventor of the light bulb.
Oh yeah,
and you guys
probably
know this. Yeah, and he was being interviewed one time by some kind of a newspaper reporter, and the reporter asked him, you know. Because he engaged in literally thousands of experiments with, you know, laboriously constructing a bulb with different metallurgical elements for the filament, you know, because he was looking for something that would glow really bright but not melt. He literally went through thousands of experiments constructing a light bulb in his laboratory. And so the reporter asked him, he says, how did you deal with all that failure? And he said, you know, I never considered any one of those experiments a failure. He said, each one of them brought me closer to my solution.
Wow.
And I always remember that. That's what a great attitude. It's like, when something doesn't work, it's because, okay, there's something that does, and now I'm a little bit closer to finding out what does work, you know.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, see my the friend. End from the beginning. You know,
I have a scientific friend who likes to say you haven't failed unless you failed to get a result. So the result is what we learned from. And now we can, you know, take that one off and keep going. I think that kind of sums perfection up, the road at least, you know.
Yeah, the purpose, is in that. To achieve it.
With all of these great game metaphors, let the game begin. Let the game begin. Let's start.
10,000 hours studying the Urantia book.
Oh, wow, Chuck. Yes. I do, actually. I calculated that I have spent personally about 5,000 hours standing on my feet at a booth telling people about it.
Oh, wow.
And
wow,
so
crazy.
In 48
really?
Years, and I'm sure
hours.
This is true with all of you, we've spent at least 10,000 hours studying it.
I
know,
think so,
I don't know how.
For sure.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's clearly a passion to all of us here. And
Looks like there's 8,760 hours in a year. So multiply that by how many years you've been reading it and how many hours in that day you've been reading it.
Right. How many hours it took to read it in the first place, but then you said studying it, but still, even still, I mean... You know, when you take on the responsibility of teaching it, then you, you know, it's like, it's like one of the first things the Course in Miracles says is, if you would know something, teach it to learn it. And yeah, you, those of us, and I know all of you have said, I'm gonna do a workshop on this subject from the Arantia book. How does the study goes into that? Yeah, it's interesting. That's interesting.
Well, that's what makes it. That's what's great about doing workshops. You learn so much about whatever you do the workshop about.
Oh yes,
I know. Yeah. You get such keen insights from it.
Yeah, it's a unique learning experience. unique, but it's a.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a good one.
Well, I definitely want to petition the universe that we get to take it in some form with us, because I can't imagine life without it at this point.
I actually think, Paula, that when we get up to the mansion worlds, that I'm guessing, but it sure makes sense to me, we're going to have so many of our fellows from this world appearing on there who are spiritually, they're spiritually on target. I mean, they're yearning for the right thing, so they survive, but they don't have any of the background or information that comes from this text. And I'm actually of the opinion that some of us will spend some time teaching the Urantia book and its contents, the essence of it, to many, many people from Urantia to help them get acclimatized and oriented.
Wow. That's an interesting thought.
We'll be teaching them, I'm sure. I mean,
So we'll have that in some form, right?
To me, it's like the orientation course that most people will get. We just get to have it down here, which is a tremendous advantage. I mean, we're so lucky to have it to work with in our lives. I was just thinking while we were talking, you know, I mean, to me, this is such a huge stroke of good luck, and it's, I don't feel like I deserved it. But I happened to run into the thing in my teenage years, right? And, you know, and I know most of us here have run into it very early. And you think about how formative it has been in the whole way we've lived our lives. I can't imagine what my life would have been like without the perspectives from this revelation.
I agree.
It's been such an amazing gift. Yeah.
And the hard part when you go to tell somebody about it is taking yourself out of that perspective enough to try to remember what it was like to not have it.
Yeah.
It's very, very difficult.
Yeah.
And I see that a lot with outreach. We start talking about, you know, frandalanks. We go down
around. That's what I always start with. I start with frandalanks talking about the book.
Oh, yeah, always.
Ultimate Songs, and then it goes on from there. It's a short conversation.
You know, I used to have this experience. You were talking about the booth, Paula, and I remember it. And it came to be the way I went about it every time. It's whenever I would get into a booth, and you know, we all did this for years and years. I would grab a book, and I would open it to the section where Gaynard and Jesus run into the two ladies of the night. It's about a page and a half, right? Where they talk with them, you know, they just all come to tears with what Jesus is sharing with them, and then he takes them home to Justice's wife, and who takes them in, and they start their whole new life together. And they say it was just a few months later that the older of the two ladies passed on, and that she was full of hope and anticipation for the eternal life that waited for her. And so I would open it to that section, and I would just wait for someone to come along and just say, you know, here's a nice little segment. Why don't you pick this out?
Just read
and they would sit down and take about 5-6 minutes to read that section. And it was such an interesting experience to sit there in a state of prayer for this person. And as they were looking at this vignette in the Urantia book and say, you know, Father, do your work in them. If they're ready, if they're hungry, you know, awaken that hunger in them and get them excited. And sometimes it would take, and they would just, you know, I would see some of them broke into tears because it's such a powerful section. So that moment of discovery, you know, and for me, it was like, what an incredible privilege it is to be there at the moment that someone discovers this revelation.
And begins
to understand what it might be, you know.
Yeah.
It's such a, it's a really a magical threshold. Those are amazing. I know we've all had them. Those are amazing experiences.
Oh, yeah. And it's worth all the hours you put in to get one of those, you know, even
just
if you
one.
Went for 30 hours over a weekend, which is what I normally did, stood at the booth for 30 hours over one weekend. And even if just one person you felt like really connected with it, it was worth it. It was worth the 30 hours, without a doubt.
You remember, Paula, you and I shared this amazing experience in South Africa with the two guys. You remember? And we've told the story before, but it's such an amazing experience. We were at a booth in South Africa, it's some big, it was Parliament of World Religions, as a matter of fact, in South Africa, Cape Town. And Paul and I were manning the booth, and We had to go away and leave the booth unoccupied for a while. Everyone was out to lunch or couldn't do it. So it was empty for about an hour, and we had books open on the tables. And there were these two young African, I want to say boys. They couldn't have been much more than their late teens.
They were guards. They were hired guards for the event.
Yeah. They were standing at the two of the doorways near our booth.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were looking. They were really curious. We came back, and both of them were sitting at the booth poring over the book. And they were obviously very excited. And you and I both came back. And I'll never forget, one of them looked up and said, "Do you know what you have here? This is a revelation."
Really?
They were so excited they could hardly contain themselves, and we gave each one of them we gave a copy of the arrangement because they could never afford it, and they clutched it to their chests, and they were overjoyed, and they walked away. And I often wonder what happened to those two young guys. You know,
me too.
It was such an amazing moment.
Yeah.
It was an amazing moment. I had a woman come up to me in that expo and tell me, "What is this thing? It's kept me up all night." I said, "It's a revelation. At least that's what I think." And she said, I'm inclined to agree with you. But yeah, they're wonderful moments. Absolutely wonderful moments that I treasure for eternity. I will treasure those moments more than. But we should start reading, I think, my friends. That was a nice respite, though.
What a great
Thanks
idea.
Thanks for that conversation. Yeah, what a novel.
A novel idea.
who would like to read? You know, our friends on the board give us a hard time because last week we started reading early and they were like, "What?" But anyway,
we love you guys.
You keep us going. Okay, so who wants to read section for the Spirit of Divine?
If somebody doesn't have a passion, I will be glad to go forward.
Oh,
but
that'd be great.
If somebody is burning to read, I'll let them read.
Go forth, passionate one.
Go
okay,
forth, good
hearing, hearing no one else, then here we go. The Spirit of Divine Ministry. Paralleling the physical universe wherein paradise gravity holds all things together is the spiritual universe wherein the word of the Son interprets the thought of God and, when made flesh, demonstrates the loving mercy of the combined nature of the associated creators. But in and through all this material and spiritual creation, there is a vast stage whereon the infinite spirit and his spirit offspring show forth the combined mercy, patience, and everlasting affection of the divine parents towards the intelligent children of their cooperative devising and making. Everlasting ministry to mind is the essence of the spirit's divine character. And all the spirit offspring of the conjoined actor partake of this desire to minister, divine urge to service. God is love, the Son is mercy,
The Spirit is ministry. The ministry of divine love and endless mercy to all intelligent creation. The Spirit is the personification of the Father's love and the Son's mercy. In Him they are eternally united for universal service. The Spirit is love applied to the creature creation, the combined love of the Father and the Son. On your rancho, the Infinite Spirit is known as an omnipresent influence, a universal presence. But in Havona, you shall know Him as a personal presence of actual ministry. Here, the ministry of the Paradise Spirit is the exemplary and inspiring pattern for each of His coordinate spirits and subordinate personalities, ministering to the created beings on the worlds of time and space. In this divine universe, the Infinite Spirit fully participated in the seven transcendental appearances of the Eternal Son. Likewise, did He participate with the original Michael Son in the seven bestowals upon the circuits of Havona, thereby becoming the sympathetic and understanding spirit minister to every pilgrim of time traversing these perfect circles on high. When a Creator Son of God accepts the creatorship charge of responsibility for a projected local universe, the personalities of the Infinite Spirit pledge themselves tireless ministers of this Michael Son when He goes forth on His mission of creative adventure, especially in the persons of the creative daughters, the local universe mother spirits. Do we find the Infinite Spirit devoted to the task of fostering the ascension of the material creatures to higher and higher levels of spiritual attainment. And all this work of creature ministry is done in perfect harmony with the purposes and in close association with the personalities of the Creator Sons of these local universes. As the sons of God are engaged in the gigantic task of revealing the Father's personality of love to a universe, so is the Infinite Spirit dedicated to the unending ministry of revealing the combined love of the Father and the Son to the individual minds of all the children of each universe. In these local creations, the Spirit does not come down to the material races in the likeness of mortal flesh, as do certain of the sons of God. But the Infinite Spirit and His coordinate spirits do downstep themselves, do joyfully undergo an amazing series of divine attenuations until they appear as angels to stand by your side and guide you through the lowly paths of earthly existence. By this very diminishing series, the Infinite Spirit does actually and as a person draw very near to every being of the animal origin spheres. And all this the Spirit does without in the least invalidating His existence as the third person of deity at the center of all things. The conjoined Creator is truly and forever the great ministering personality, the universal mercy minister. To comprehend the ministry of the Spirit, ponder the truth that He is the combined portrayal of the Father's unending love and of the Son's eternal mercy. The Spirit's ministry is not, however, restricted solely to the representation of the eternal Son and the universal Father. The Infinite Spirit also possesses the power to minister to the creatures of the realm in His own name and right. The third person is of divine dignity and also bestows the universal ministry of mercy in His own behalf. As man learns more of the loving and tireless ministry of the lower orders of the creature family of His Infinite Spirit, he will all the more admire and adore the transcendent nature and matchless character of this combined action of the Universal Father and the Eternal Son. Indeed is this Spirit the eyes of the Lord, which are ever over the righteous, and the divine ears, which are ever open to their prayers.
Beautiful.
Wow, why does my heart swell when you read
that?
Wow. So intense.
Because this divine counselor is saying the right stuff.
He is. He's playing the right chords.
Wow.
Yeah, there was a wonderful triad in that first paragraph. I'm trying to find it again. It's interesting. We just I can't find it. Darn it. Maybe it's the second one. Oh yeah, God is love, the Son is mercy, and the Spirit is ministry. It's the beginning of the second paragraph.
Right.
Love, mercy, and ministry.
There it is.
Such a beautiful triad.
Mm-hmm.
Love, mercy, and ministry.
Would you say that all three of those are personal?
Without a doubt.
Absolutely.
Those are delivered by a person, by a personality.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
And to a personality, Chuck, you can't express those except in relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
I guess you
yeah.
can have mercy on yourself, and you probably should have it, but that's, you know, and that's, I guess we do have relationships with ourselves in that way, but it's more poignant to express that, those characteristics of love, mercy, and ministry to another individual. That's the satisfaction.
It's a person-to-person kind of thing,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Pam said, God is love, the Son is mercy, and the Spirit is ministry. And that I was saying last week, you know, I like to take the triads and say, okay, this one represents me, God. This one represents the Son, and this one represents, because they're all of those great pillars of creation are coming down from that original, you know, the three. We said the three is what defines it, holds up the stool. You have to have at least three. That's what's holding up creation, is those three.
Mm. Uh-huh.
And
yes,
so much insight
stool.
In those triads. Yeah,
the divine stool
that we all sit upon, we all live, move, and have our being on. Right, that vast infinite plane that's upheld by the three. Wow, that to me, this section is so tender. It is just so tender.
Mm-hmm.
And Andre, you read it so well. Thank you.
Oh, yes. Oh, you're a master.
Man.
You know, it's interesting. I really enjoyed paragraph 3, where they bring out this idea of the infinite Spirit fully participating in the seven transcendental appearances of the Eternal Son.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much for that, you know, it's highly significant. We don't realize entirely how significant it is until they underscore it by saying, likewise, did he participate with the original Michael Son in the seven bestowals upon the circuits of Avona. And to recap that, the Michael Son at various times from the first local universe in presumably super universe number one did his seven bestowals on the seven circuits of Avona progressively from the seventh inward to the first. And that during the times of Gran Fonda. So you can imagine that this was spread out over a very long period of time. Mm-hmm. It could have been a much longer period of time than Michael, seven bestowals over a billion years. You know, consider how long it might take Gran Fonda to have gotten through the seventh circle, 250 million worlds approximately, You know, they say upward of 245 million. And, you know, diminishing numbers in between, but still, they're not likely spending a year on each world. Maybe they do, but it's more than likely 100 years on each world or something like that. What seems reasonable? That's not the point.
Mm.
The point for me in this is the infinite spirit is participating in this, and they don't say the same thing about our creative mother spirit during Michael's bestowals. But is that because that wasn't the case? Or is that simply because they expect us to apply? If the infinite spirit did it here, well, then you know a creative mother spirit that is essentially cut from the same cloth is going to do the same thing with Michael. And thereby, the creative mother spirit has improved in her ministry to all creation as a result of Michael's bestowals. And, you know, it's only been in the last maybe year that that has really occurred to me, that, you know, after so long, with the book, you know, there is such a, not a de-emphasis, but there it's so understated. And I think it may only have to do with the times in which the book came through. They didn't want maybe the book to not evolve toward people having a recognition of the mother. But, you know, those of us that are studying this are having a growing recognition of the mother aspect of God and how that actually functions in the universe. And this is really significant then, that our creative mother spirit grew along with her consort, the creator's son, during his bestowals, and also upstepped and grew in sovereignty. Hence, that elevation. It wasn't just like a figurehead, well, this would be the right thing to do, I'm just going to elevate my consort. No, he really recognizes that his consort is an equal, could not have done it without her. And that's an interesting aspect of the infinite spirit showing that same kind of support on this level of Havona and early on.
Yeah, I think for sure it's the latter, Andre. But go ahead, Chuck.
The original pattern. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's one brief mention that I think is very intriguing, which happened on the Mount of Transfiguration, where they refer to her as his ever-present coworker.
Yeah. Right.
And when I read that, I went, like she spoke through the Father Melchizedek, you know, it's when Gabriel and when the three paradise, she was waiting for, you know, the word from the three paradise deities speaking through their local universe representatives. And he got the sign off from Gabriel and he got the sign off from the Mother Spirit. But then the Father, of course, said, well, we're not quite done yet. but in that mention, I'm trying to find it.
I'm familiar with it.
I'm sure you are. And it kind of fits with what you're saying, I think. Here it is. They say that the testimony
What's the
of
reference?
Satisfaction of the it's 158.33.
Okay, thanks.
158.33. The testimony of the satisfaction of the infinite spirit as to the fullness of the Arantia bestowal in the likeness of mortal flesh. I mean, that's an item in a list. So it's the second of the three to speak. And they say the universe representative of the infinite spirit, the immediate associate of Michael on Salvington and his ever-present co-worker, on this occasion, spoke through the Father Melchizedek.
Yeah.
They don't name her, though. Interesting.
His
ever-present
sort of
co-worker. But again, they let you
an immediate
infer.
Associate on Salvington. Yeah, an immediate associate on Salvington.
and the representative of the Infinite Spirit. I mean, it's very clear who they're talking about. Yeah, but they don't call her out as the Mother Spirit, but that's who they're talking about. So that idea that she was actually working with him in some sense through the whole bestowal, I mean, that would be so important. Mm-hmm. I mean, for her, it just is a learning, I don't know how else to put it, it's a learning experience, mm-hmm. just like Michael was going through. That I can't see how it could have been otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
No, they do. They make it pretty clear who they're talking about
here. Think of them as our mm-hmm. as our parents, as our local universe mother and father. So on such an important thing that the father, mm-hmm. meaning Michael, is off to, I'm sure that the mother would look, you know, I can't imagine her not being part of it in some meaningful way.
Mm-hmm.
What that looked like, they don't describe, they mm-hmm. say. But this comment that referring to her mm-hmm. as his ever-present coworker,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
That's pretty compelling, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is.
I always envision her that way in his life, in Jesus'
uh-huh.
life. Always.
Yeah.
I always mm-hmm. envisioned that he was in constant, you know, he's in constant communion with the Father, the Paradise Father, but I always envision that he's in constant communication with her as well. Always.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I always
imagine her ministering mind through the entire local universe.
Mm-hmm.
And here she has the opportunity of ministering mind to her consort as he is bestowed in human form. You know, this is true in, you know, at least six of the bestowals. It's hard to fathom exactly whether or not that would have pertained to the fifth bestowal, which was, you know, Anuversa. But that aside, the Mother Spirit is always there providing mind ministry. And so especially looking at the Marantia and the mortal bestowals, what a remarkable thing to actually be taking that kind of a role with someone you know so fully well, but that is going through an evolutionary process in that bestowal. It's quite remarkable to try to think of that. I don't even want to characterize it. I think it's useful, though, to think of the fact that, you know, Michael literally was within the womb, as we are, of the mind of the Mother Spirit.
Of the Mother.
Yeah.
So true.
Yeah.
In a physical
body. He fully understood it,
too.
Yeah.
And he would not have had that experience before.
Yeah, there's no other way to have it.
Nope. True.
Jump in a human body and
wow.
Yeah.
Incarnate somehow.
And mm-hmm. and to your point,
I mean,
about the paragraph four where it says, here is the ministry of the Paradise Spirit is the exemplary and inspiring pattern for each of his coordinate spirits. Well, she is certainly one of them. And subordinate
mm-hmm.
personalities ministering to the creative beings on the worlds of time and space. So I think we can absolutely infer that our mother spirit took every bit as much tender care and involvement with Michael's seven bestowals
mm-hmm.
with the life of
mm-hmm.
Jesus as the
mm-hmm.
infinite spirit
mm-hmm.
did with
yeah.
the eternal son and with the original Michael.
You know, do I remember?
And you know what?
And am I? Go ahead, Chuck.
Oh, well, okay. I was just going to say there's a pattern here. That
yeah, there's a pattern.
Consider when in terms of our relationship to the guardian seraphim at the point in
mm-hmm.
time
ooh,
when we're
mm-hmm.
assigned guardian seraphim. We could think of them as our ever-present co-workers.
Yes. Mm-hmm. They
yeah.
are. Truly, they are.
In a real sense, I think. So there's a
yes.
kind of a, anyway, interesting to think of the seraphim that way, as co-workers.
They don't descend with us, though. They ascend with us. That's the other
thing. They definitely ascend with us. They depend on us, just like we depend on them. Yeah. Anyway, sorry, Marvin.
They meet us where we are and ascend with us, Go ahead, Marvin.
Well, I seem to remember that, you know, the Creator Son is being the offspring of the Father and the Son is from the moment of first being created is a full-blown person, a fully functioning personality, and that the Infinite Spirit is actually emerging through stages of personification in a sense, moving through stages of becoming more and more a personal being. And my recollection was that
you mean the
Creative
Mother Spirit.
I mean the Creative Mother Spirit. Yeah. Thanks, Andre, for the clarification. And my recollection was that the, especially the seventh bestowal of Michael and the crowning of Michael, Christ Michael, as
the Jubilee.
The full sovereignty of his universe, that she went through a stage of further development as a fully functioning personality. Am I correct in that recollection?
That's what I recollect.
Say that again.
Well,
she became
she's definitely personal. More personal.
Yeah.
She emerged in stages. Right.
In fact, She became for the first time a fully functioning personality in addition to a pervasive spirit presence. And it has to do with just the nature of the third person deity. The second person is the full embodiment of personality as the first created personal being. And the spirit is kind of is capable of being everywhere all at once because she's a diffuse spiritual reality rather than a distinct and embodied person, but somehow she becomes much more personal upon the completion of the seventh bestowal.
The way they put it is that she became recognizable by all contacting personalities or something like that.
That's what I remember.
Yeah.
Yes, and that was like 2,000 years ago, right?
Not long ago.
Yeah.
It wasn't long ago. No, so our experience on this planet is we are in the infancy of experiencing the person of the third person of Trinity as a person. Mm-hmm. So it's like... That was part of the kickoff of honoring, women or, in other words, it's all a part of the revelation that Michael presented on the planet. And yet we are in the infancy of experiencing her as a person. So it's like that's the big news, actually. That's part of the big news on this planet. The personhood of the third person of Trinity is being recognized on our little sphere. I mean, that's another reason why his manifestation here is just so huge. It's not just earth changing, it's cosmic changing,
That's really
excellent.
That's really
a lot of energy. A lot of energy has been released in that.
It's almost like the culmination of Jesus' bestowal and the elevation of the Mother Spirit to where we can all recognize her and approach her and engage with her as a person. It's almost like it inaugurates a whole new era of motherhood, the motherhood of God. That we haven't had on this world, but in the entire local universe. That's really intriguing. I really like that. Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great.
And we have to discover it. It's our discovery to make. And when you think about how out of step this world is with that discovery, then you realize how important it becomes then for us to understand that that divine feminine, Trudy on the board said, the rise of the divine feminine. How important that is, that softness, that tenderness, that, you know, it's become the axiom of weakness on our world, but in truth, it is not. It is not weakness at all, but the ultimate strength. And it should be celebrated and protected and loved, honored.
Well, and discovered.
But first it must be discovered.
I mean, one of the important things they say about her is that she's in a, where do they have this? Oh, yeah. That the creative spirits are in a class by themselves in their relations with encircuited creatures of the Father, which would be us. So our approach to her or her nature is in a class by itself. That means, okay, we have the whole new kind of being here. We have to understand and figure out how to approach, because this is where they say that the that, and this is in paper 34, it was at the time of the Jubilee of Jubilees, you know, when Michael returned as a master son. They say it was at this time that she became so augmented in personal qualities as to be personally recognized by all contacting individuals.
There you go.
You just have to know how to contact her. I think that's part of what's happening here, because we're just learning about this. You know, only through the ranch book would we even know that she's contactable.
That's a good point.
But in a class by herself. So
yeah.
Well, it bears reading that other paragraph in 34, 2:1, having undergone marked personality metamorphosis at the time of life creation. So there's already beginning emergence right there. The divine minister thereafter functions as a person and cooperates in a very personal manner with the Creator Son in the planning and management of the extensive affairs of their local creation. To many universe types of being, even this representation of the Infinite Spirit may not appear to be wholly personal during the ages preceding the final Michael bestowal. But subsequent to the elevation of the Creator Son to the sovereign authority of a Master Son, the Creative Mother Spirit becomes so augmented in personal qualities as to be personally recognized by all contacting individuals. So,
thanks for adding that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Hi, Mom.
The other way that she's different that's really intriguing, which is that her presence pervades her local universe. So, like, we have the adjuster that indwells.
Yes.
The adjuster indwells us. And we have the spirit of truth that it envelops us. They describe that in another part of the book.
And lives in our heart.
But she pervades. So that means she's everywhere.
Right.
You know, the additional way that's been helpful for me, Chuck, about in addition to pervading, is the idea that she is woven throughout our nature.
Mm-hmm.
She's woven into our physical being, our bodies were designed, and in a sense, are part of her ministry to us. All the physical energies in this part of the cosmos, and our mind structure is part of her. I think even when we're reconstituted on the mansion worlds, our Maranja nature will be an emanation of the Mother Spirit's energies.
She gives us a new kind of mind.
It's almost like she's really woven into our nature on many, many levels.
Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah. Well, they even say that the adjutant mind spirits, each one of those is a level of her consciousness.
Right, sure.
I read that.
Mm-hmm.
Says,
yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Right. an extension.
Yeah, my mind is her. I mean, there's a...
She, yeah. She's an extension of her presence, of her,
right.
Really.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, you know, this mm-hmm. whole topic. Oh.
Uh-huh.
Go ahead, Pam.
Well, I was just going to say what intrigued me is the second to last paragraph where it under 8:4-7. The infinite spirit also possesses the power to minister to creatures of the realm in his own name and right.
Mm-hmm.
So how is that different? In other words, in what respect? Is that part of this personality eruption? Is that part of it? I mean, what are they talking about here?
The conjoint actor is a person in her own right. Find that back in when they talk about the origin of the infinite spirit. So the origin, the infinite spirit represents the Father and the Son. That's why it's the conjoint actor. But they always point out that he's also a person in his own right. He does his own thing.
Right. Right.
In addition to
that's what I get from it, Pam. Too, Chuck said. I get
about.
That they're saying, you know, each one of the Trinity can minister to the creatures of time in their own life.
Is unique.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But it is interesting because of that representative function, the fact that the infinite mm-hmm. spirit comes as essentially the culminating act of the Father and the Son in that act of
mm-hmm.
effectively infinite
action.
Creation. Yeah. That you get the sense of the infinite spirit as being the representative, and they underscore that over and over again, but they don't want then that concept to cause it to arise in the mind as like, well, that makes the infinite spirit somehow subordinate to the Father and the Son. No, they created
mm-hmm.
the infinite spirit to be a divine and infinite with
actor.
The Father and the Son. Mm-hmm. And that's remarkable that the Father and the Son could do that.
And that ministry.
Yeah.
You know what I loved about this whole section was the author takes it from paradise all the way down, right? In one section.
Mm-hmm.
He just takes it all the way down to us. It's so masterful. It's so
mm-hmm.
beautiful that way, because here we are talking about eternal, perfect transactions, but we're going to bring it all the way down to you, to where you live, and here they are, these precious spirits, these angels that minister to you directly,
mm-hmm.
personally.
Mm-hmm.
It just, no wonder your heart swells when you read it.
Yeah.
Because he brings it right on down, you know, in these eight paragraphs.
Well,
mm-hmm.
and you know,
it's just marvelous.
You look at the line in that last paragraph, which is so interesting. Is what they say is, as man learns more of the loving and tireless ministry of the lower orders of the creature family of this infinite spirit, he will all the more admire and adore the transcendent nature and matchless character of the spirit, this combined action of the universal Father and the eternal Son. So there's this experience all the way up the ladder of the eternal ascent. As we get to know our angels and all of the other celestial ministers, the children of the third source, we grow more and more in appreciation and admiration and adoration of the third person of the Trinity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's probably true of all of the orders of the sons of God as well, that the more we come to know the Melchizedeks and the Lalanandeks and the Verondadeks and all the other higher orders of sonship, that we come to understand and appreciate much more fully and adore the eternal Mother Son. And I think also there must be an equivalent for the Father as well. I think it's important to know the creators, like mm-hmm. the creator sons and the other offspring mm-hmm. of the universal father directly. We come to understand the father's nature as well. So it's like a ladder of relationships all the way up of growing mm-hmm. Understanding and appreciation.
Imagine how that's yeah. going to go forward when you can actually have a conversation with your angels and they can minister to you directly and not,
man.
You know.
Well,
yeah.
There's nothing stopping us from talking with them right now.
No,
that's
nothing.
True. That's true.
And there's nothing
stopping
their presence.
There's nothing stopping us from listening to them either.
Except
we can't hear
them. There's the rub. But
they don't necessarily speak as we speak. That's the key right there. They don't necessarily. Yeah.
There's nothing that says we cannot try to talk with them. They are presences, and we are all in the same universe. We're putting our own limitations on it.
That's true. There's nothing stopping us from talking to this. Infinite spirit.
Well, just to slow down just a little bit. I agree with you.
No,
hold the phone.
There's nothing stopping us, but they make it very clear that our sense of the angels and how directly we experience them and relate to them, as well as how directly we hear the voice of the adjuster, all of these faculties are very muffled by our material animal estate.
Of course.
And it's not that we can't begin it, and it's absolutely desirable that we do, but I for one am incredibly excited to wake up on the mansion worlds and see my angels directly with my Marantia senses and love them and interact with them the same way that I can interact with you guys, you know, in person, and with my adjuster as well, in a much more direct fashion. So I agree. I think we're starting it here, but I think it's a huge leap in accessibility once we wake up on the mansion worlds.
Oh,
yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. But it's like just, you know, it's a choice we make.
Well,
for them to be either present or non-present, you know? I mean, it's like, I don't know.
Isn't
it just seems like a good exercise. Yeah, yeah, it's a good
faith.
Exercise. It's a good faith exercise to, you know, expect that we will get an answer
mm-hmm.
ahead of time. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. it's kind of like, you know, where, what's your purpose?
Anyway, there's many ways it's
used. Yeah.
But I have thought I wanted to share that I think is relevant to this.
Please.
That hadn't really occurred to me before. You know, in the second discourse in religion, where Jesus famously says, you know, it's not your concepts or your idea of God is so important. It's growing in your ability to feel the presence of God, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it kind of hit me the other day that was really the reason he put it that way, maybe, or part of the importance of how he put that. It has to do with the fact that we don't have visible superhuman presence on the planet because of the rebellion. You know, on a normal world, there would be
right,
superhuman
right.
presence. So
right.
the idea of that extending into the invisible realms, you know, would make sense. It would just be, you know, it would be taught in the earliest days of Dalmatia, the city of the prince and all of that. But on this planet, all that's been wiped away. So he's left in this position. Jesus is left in this position where he... trying to give a greater teaching about God and introduce the apostles and everybody to a larger experience of divine presence, but he couldn't point to any visible being to do that. So the only way to accomplish that is through developing your ability to feel the presence of God. And it just kind of hit me. Yeah, that's why that was so important for him to teach that, because there wasn't there's no other alternative.
There's no other alternative.
There's no other way to just, I mean, you can accept the idea of God intellectually you know, and that's sort of, you know, our thoughts lead us to God in that sense. But he's making a point there. He's saying, yeah, you can do that, but that's not really where we're trying to get to. What I'm really hoping is that you'll grow in your ability to feel the presence of God. So that's an actual experience. It's not just an idea. And that, at that time, and even continuing to this day, that's the only way. That's our only access to deity is through feeling the presence of deity.
Our sense of feel.
You know,
that's
it's interesting. It's
true.
Chuck, it's almost like
level.
It's almost like, I mean, to use a metaphor, it's almost like the gods have designed a ladder that reaches all the way down to us, and the presence on our world of the planetary prince and the corporeal staff and Adam and Eve and all their progeny are like the first 2, 3, 4 rungs of the ladder. And in our world, they're missing.
They're gone.
They're gone. And so we have to sort of intuitively stretch and reach and sense and in a sense kind of grope our way towards spiritual reality because we were missing those initial rungs on the ladder.
Mm-hmm. We have to help each other up. We have to help each other up to that lowest rung.
Right.
And the fact that we can feel the presence of God is what makes us Agendonters. We don't have an Adam and Eve who have been here for 37,000 years pointing the way, saying, I'm your representative from the universe. See, here I am. I've lived for 37,000 years. Do you doubt me? Right? What's to doubt? Right?
Well,
you see
and,
the
yeah,
presence.
And then there are others.
Teaching.
Yeah, and then there are others who have been here for 500,000 years. Can you imagine talking to a being that's been on the planet for 500,000 years? That would be incredible. And the thing that's interesting for me is that this revelation, the Urantia revelation, is a compensatory mechanism. They're trying to give us some temporary rungs, I think, until they can provide us with living beings again here and a planetary center or two, which I'm convinced they will eventually reestablish a planetary center that combines the elements of the planetary prince and the Adamic regime, because every normal world upon reaching right light life has these centers, you know. So at some point after the adjudication and the circuits, restoration of the circuits, they're going to be working, I think, to restore us to much more normal set of circumstances, I think.
Hey, you know what just came to mind when you said that, Marvin, was one of the last scenes in The Return of the King from the trilogy where the four hobbits are standing there and the whole kingdom bows down to them. You know, it's interesting. Yeah, it comes to me because if we do, and Pam, you're on a roll today, she said on the board, we help each other grope. It's a grope effort.
It is. But
you know, if we, when we achieve this, just like those four hobbits achieved what they achieved, the whole kingdom will bow down and say, nicely done, because we did it. Against all odds.
Yeah.
And
really,
it's the ultimate. It's like Jesus' ultimate triumph, right? When they say, you know, in his hour of humiliation, that was the one of his greatest achievements in all of his long career. Imagine that. That hour of humiliation where he did not break, where he did not succumb and fall into, you know, whatever trap he might have fallen into as a human being, he didn't. He triumphed. They did not break him.
Well, you know, the equivalent... Go ahead, finish, Paula.
No, and that's us. Right?
That's us.
Yeah. We can triumph that way. And he said it. We can do it. We can do it. I've done it, and you can do it. He said that. And we can achieve that.
Mm-hmm.
That's up to all of us. And we can do it together. That's how we'll do it, together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember that scene. It's a wonderful, wonderful scene. It's so powerful. Yeah, because they're such humble little creatures, the hobbits, you know, and that's us.
Yes.
That's us.
The hobbitses.
You know? And I the hobbitses, right, with their furry little feet. And I remember, what I remember is, I think the equivalent character in our legends is Amadon. You know, when they say, what of Amadon of your ancient, you know, does he still stand firm? You know, this creature of the realm, this, you know, this human being who works in conjunction with Van, is he still loyal and holding the fort,
right,
in a sense, you know?
Right.
And so
does
he
still
really
prove true?
Yeah, I think the hobbits are like archetypal characters along the lines of Amadon, working with Gandalf the wizard, you know? there's a lot in those legends.
Mm-hmm.
What a brilliant piece of writing that was.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Incredible, yeah.
How it touched so on those, our human themes, all of them.
Oh, yeah.
You know, which most of the best stories we ever tell do. But that one was above the, you know, the bar.
Well, and the depiction, majestic. The depiction of iniquity, you know, is sort of embodied in Sauron and Saruman, you know, the wizard that goes astray and becomes, they become obsessed with power and their own power, you know, which is really what happened to Lucifer, you know.
Oh,
so it's,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah, those stories really are archetypal.
Oh, yeah, they are.
We have such an opportunity to put the story out there. I mean, there are so many shadows of the story that are being told, and it's like, what is it? Jordan Peterson says, the best story wins.
That's true.
Like, don't we have the best story? And let's find a way to get that story out there as a story, because all the characters are there, the good and the bad and the ugly, you know. It's like, I wish I was better equipped to do it myself, because that's where I'm hanging out right now. I'm looking for a way to get that story out there. We've got it, you know.
You know, David Cantor never tires of telling us all that's our
right.
job, because the story
that's
is
right.
going away.
Mm-hmm.
And the story has lost its power.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's truth
to that. At least the way
it's
being currently told, yeah. That's what that's what his theme is of his latest film, which should be out in the next year or so.
Mm-hmm.
But in any event, I think that's important. I think you're right. We have to, you know, all of this, it's not so much that the revelation needs to get out there, you know, complete to everybody. You know, we were very much purists back in the 70s and 80s, you know, that, you know, you can't give people pieces of this. You can't bootleg the teachings. Well, then we became better at bootlegging the teachings, what we called bootlegging them, which was this concept of taking a concept, stating it, you know, outside of the terms that the Arantia book is talking about, but in terms that people could understand, and by doing so, give them effectively the concept that they could run with in their current mental framework and allow it to grow that way. Well, what is the thought adjuster doing with all of us anyway? What are all of our angels doing with us anyway? They're highlighting whatever concepts we have that make sense, that are true, that are functional, and upstepping us through all of that. So why should we decry doing that? Well, we don't anymore. But we haven't yet gotten to the point where we understand just how much fluidity we have. What ought to give us some pause is
and
to
creativity.
Think, yes.
Well,
and,
you know, and
to
I think
how a plagiarized work, okay, the Caballo de Troya series by J.J. Benitez, who essentially
Urantia concepts out of part three, out of part four, and some out of part two and three, and took them whole cloth, made a novelization about it, sold millions of books, literally millions of books in many languages, mainly Spanish and Portuguese, and has had an influence in creating the bridge to the Urantia teachings that wasn't done by those who were studying the book themselves as effectively. Now that should teach us something.
He tilled the soil for us. And we see the fruit.
The largest growing component of readers in the Urantia movement are Hispanic speakers in Latin America.
And he knew what
well,
would
I mean,
move
I think when you,
people.
You know, I think when you, you know, you guys, I hope I'm not harping on stuff, but when you go in search of a new storyline, right, that is a compelling vision and a new story for modern men and women. And for me, it's out there wandering in the wilderness of the modern age that there is a place to come that is a place of returning home to the spiritual family, the intimate and nurturing and nourishing supportive relationship that we can have with God as a loving parent. And so to me, the story is one of homecoming. It's one of coming home to this new understanding of who we are and what the cosmos is as our home. And people are suffering and struggling. They're really in an existential kind of agony in our modern culture. And what they're saying, when they're saying the, you know, cancer, David says that the old story is no longer applicable. It's the story of the kingdom, right? It's the story of power and power relationships, you know, with a powerful sovereign. And what the fifth epical revelation is telling us is there's a higher metaphor. You know, there's a much more profound way to understand who God is and what you're a part of. And come home, be loved. Come into the circle of family relationships. And
it reminds me of that great quote, what a shame it is to dream of God afar off in the skies when the Spirit of the Father lives within your own heart.
Exactly. It's intimate. Yeah. It's an intimate experience.
So true, so true. And, you know, here is what they actually say, Marvin, and I know you guys have heard this so many times, but still, we should take it in because they're telling us where humanity's at. They say this in paper 99.4.6, during the psychologically unsettled times, 20th, and I'm sure we can assume the 21st century, amid the economic upheavals, the moral cross currents, and the sociologic riptides of the cyclonic transitions of a scientific era, thousands upon thousands, millions of men and women have become humanly dislocated. They are anxious, restless, fearful, uncertain, and unsettled. As never before in the world's history, they need the consolation and stabilization of sound religion, which is what you just described, Marvin, coming home to that place where they are at home in the universe. They belong. In the face of unprecedented scientific achievement and mechanical development, there is spiritual stagnation and philosophic chaos. I think we can assume that they're here to help us get over that spiritual stagnation and that philosophic chaos.
Well,
know,
and then
things make sense.
Exactly. And not only make sense, but it goes back to what Chuck was talking about earlier. It goes back to a profound sense of feeling, right, of soul feeling, of spiritual sensing, of the love that this creator has for us, And you know, to another passage that we've mentioned so many times, 193:04, in the middle of the paragraph, Jesus says, "That which the world needs most to know." So there's a superlative there.
Mm-hmm.
What everyone needs most to know is men, and I'm paraphrasing, although men and women are the sons and daughters of God, and through mm-hmm. faith, they can actually realize and daily experience this ennobling truth. I mean, that's the heart of it, is right? Is to go into that inner space where the Father is there and Jesus and our Mother Spirit, and they are loving us. They're really pouring love into us, into our hearts and souls. And that is sustaining and nurturing in a way that most people don't have a clue about. And so they're wandering around in isolation, and they're starving. They're literally they're dying on the vine for lack of that love. And so, you know, that to me is our story, is come join this loving spiritual family, you know. Feel the love of your creator parent. Feel it. Experience it. You know, and it's transformative. It will change the whole way you move through life. And to me, this is the big story we have to share, is this is available.
Right.
It's available to you in every moment. Take advantage of it. Enter into that relationship.
It's the story of faith. But it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's
yeah.
like Jesus also said, most human beings are like the lost child. They spend much of their time crying in
mm-hmm.
fear and suffering in sorrow, when in very truth they are but a short distance from safety and security.
Yep.
You know, it's the same concept. I mean, they're saying
mm-hmm.
it over. And Pam, I think we're talking about the story. I think that Christians, honestly, I do, I think they will become the best at telling the story, at
mm-hmm.
reframing the story for each other, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for us because we haven't spent a whole lot of time in that group. You have, but I haven't. I made a conscious decision to walk away from religions. And I told God when I was 16, you have to reveal yourself to me because I'm not getting involved with any more religions. And of course he did, but that took me out of the churches.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be in that vein to be able to reach. And I really do have faith that the emergent Christians will uplift Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
I really believe that with all my
they're
heart.
Working on it.
They're working on it.
I mean, they're individuals now. It's not a movement anymore. It's individuals. But, they have the purest version so far, and I'm still trying to get in there and get them talking about the notion of revelation. And you know, that's something I have not been very good at. But it's like
it's huge. It's a huge concept.
It's
for them.
It's like before you were born again. You know, it's like a whole new level of acceptance. You got to throw
mm-hmm.
that old book. Not out, but off to the side. And
just a little
bit. Yeah, just see what the pattern is. What, you know, come on, let's reach out. You know, we've got this ceiling above us. We can't grow until we see the larger picture. But this whole story idea, I think what is really hitting me about it, I mean, I did say up there, I've been watching on TMC, Turner Classic, TCM,
mm-hmm.
right? The power of film, and it has been very revealing in like the topic of paradox, how important items that don't seem to work together actually make for a good story, and yet somehow there's a resolution, there's some sort of resolution between that paradox. Well, I mean, if we don't have a paradoxical story on this planet. I mean, we've got all the elements, and then he also talks about the characters, the good characters and the evil characters. I mean, my God, you know, there are people here on this planet that want to understand the Luciferian underlying story. You know, it is so much a part of the nasty side of film today, you know, is the evil
you know, and it's like evil is getting all its all the attention, and yet not enough of the resolution and the good side coming out. Mm. But all those elements, we have all of those elements in the Urantia story, and we are underneath the evil shadow, and that's why all this frustration is going on, you know, because there is a ceiling on our understanding, and so it's a limited view. So I guess I'm
and
just,
our ability and our courage. Yeah. You know, I would say there's a ceiling.
Yeah.
There has been a ceiling on our courage to tell the story. And
yes.
And we have, and we felt it was bigger than us. We're not good enough for it. We're not good enough for this story. Who am I to stand there and tell anybody to read the Urantia book? It's so much better
right.
than me. Right? But we simply
yeah.
have to find the courage to
yeah.
tell
yeah.
the story or reframe it, as you
you're
say.
Getting, yeah. Pam, what you were saying about Revelation, I think, sounds like an interesting angle or approach on all of this. To talk about Revelation as a concept, not claiming that this is a revelation
right.
or that's a revelation
right.
or that's not a revelation
right.
or whatever.
Exactly.
But just to introduce the idea of revelation. You know, what
yeah.
is it? How does that happen? Does it happen
well,
more
yeah.
than once? You know,
right.
does it happen
exactly.
inside of us? You know, there's a lot of
yep.
dimensions to
yep.
that story
yep.
that could be
yes.
explored without necessarily triggering people into thinking that we're taking away their revelation.
Exactly.
You know, like
exactly.
Or their
you know,
sacred
so,
text.
Yeah, well, the very notion that Jesus was a revelation. He was a total different
yeah.
view of
yeah.
of the God story from the Old Testament.
And we
so
need
like,
revelation.
We do.
That's
so, I mean, there's
point.
Our example right
some
there.
Some things have
right.
to be revealed.
It's right there.
They just do.
Right.
So
it has to be revealed.
I mm-hmm. you know, I have a sort of a bit of a different take on what it will take. You know, unless I saw convincing evidence that substantial numbers of folks in the Christian tradition accepted this revelation and really got the heart of it, and began to run with it and create a new story within the churches. So far, I haven't seen that happening.
No.
I haven't seen that developing.
Doesn't mean it won't happen, though.
So no, it doesn't mean it won't happen. I have a, mm-hmm. I have a, sort of a different vision as to what is needed and what will likely happen at some point. And it's beginning to happen, I think. But I think it needs to pick up and run much more powerfully. And that is, I think we're dependent on two things in the Urantia movement. One is proliferation of larger numbers of people who really do read and study this revelation in a devoted manner. And I think we're growing, but I still think it may be a couple of hundred years out. And the other thing I think it depends upon is really talented and dedicated leadership in the Urantia movement to do exactly what we're talking about, which is to take the essence, the spiritual essence of this revelation, and tell it as a new and powerful story and move forward out into the broader culture as a messenger people, right, that we mm-hmm. will eventually prepare ourselves and develop ourselves as a true messenger people, which was the,
mm-hmm.
the mantle,
right.
That was the legacy, the mantle of the Jewish people. That's what they were supposed to do, and they defaulted. They messed it up. And they've given us this new revelation. And I think our task is to grow and develop ourselves as a culture and a movement as a new messenger people with the story of spiritual family relationship that is that is saving for our world. And and I think it will happen. I think it's out ahead a little ways, but I think the conception of it is beginning to grow and develop, and we've been talking about it. And I think it will happen. I think it depends on more numbers and better, you know, more and
better techniques.
Leadership, frankly,
yeah.
better leadership. And I think it will happen. I think it's a generation or two out ahead, maybe. But we're beginning to have that vision, I think.
I agree, Marvin, and I think
I agree.
That our
yes.
work in media really does reveal that, and my hat's off to Gary
yes.
Towne, who has
yes.
run with this. And that's what he wants to do, and that's what he's gifted at doing, and that's what needs to happen. And
yeah.
It's not just Gary. It's so many of the young people who have surrounded him and want to help him. And, you know, it's such an immense opportunity. We can't, you know, miss it. We have to see the talent that's there. You know, too, Chuck, you and Derek. There's talent there. We need to capitalize on the people who are moving forward and saying, I can do this. Let me do it.
But I don't think it has to be a either or where Revelation
No, not at all.
That's kind of what
both
we're
things.
Talking about. So being
all
a messenger,
of the above.
being a messenger
storyteller.
It's kind of seems like what we're called on to do. And
your
to
ranch
not be
university,
too shy about it,
homecoming.
Or to have a way of talking about it. I mean, when we do our podcast, we're just very open about it. Okay, we're studying this book and this is what it says, and we're going to share it with you and take it or leave it, you know. Well, take it or leave it, but that's what we're doing. So if you're interested, come along, kind of. But that, you know, that can't be hidden. At a certain point, that can't be hidden. Revelatory aspect of this.
We're still getting feedback,
potential.
Guys. It's pretty acute right now. But, yeah, exactly. We have to embrace it and just, you know, develop it. I think that's what Jesus would do. He would use every avenue available to get the word out.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
He would. He would reach young people and people of all stripes where
mm-hmm.
they are.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So in that vein, anything we can do, everything we can do, personal ministry, group ministry, you know, there's a revelation on the planet, folks, and it's so important. You know, the difficulty is right now it's not cool to talk religiously. And I get that. That's hard. That makes it hard. But man, we have to keep going with it because people really need to hear.
Well, I think we
need to
make people. God interesting again.
You know,
yeah.
Exactly. I love that.
Yeah.
You know,
people are backing away from the old stories. You know, there's a big opening right now. The nuns, N-O-N-E. You know,
mm-hmm.
there's people are backing away from what does not speak anymore. This is,
mm-hmm.
you know, and there needs to be a quiet time, and it is, that's what's happening
Maybe
now.
So.
It's like
Maybe
they might
so.
Not be ready for new information just yet because they're still getting rid of what they don't believe in. But it's going to create that vacuum. It has to be filled. And that's why we have an opportunity to really put some juicy stuff that is palatable. And chewable, you know, we can swallow it.
That serves them. That feeds them.
Yes.
Right.
That feeds them.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I look at, it's interesting to look at trend lines, you know. I take a look, you know, we've all been part of this movement for 40, 50, 60 years, right? And I look back at where it was 40, 50 years ago. It was very local. There was no internet. And I look at what's going on now, and I say to myself, okay, if I draw a line from what was going on 50, 60 years ago to what's going on now, and then I extend that trend line out into the future, I'm encouraged. I mean, what I see happening is I see it really quite, for as small a movement as we are, I think we have a pretty big footprint. I mean, there are more than 600 websites. There's the works like you were mentioning, Paula, like what Gary's doing, and many, many other forms of ministry. There's Urantia University, you know, there's conferences, and there's a lot going on in many different parts of the world. The translations that are being completed.
Quote of the day from Truthbook.
And published.
Yeah.
Quote of the day for Truthbook.
Yeah.
The fact that there's an active group in Taiwan and China that's moving forward with a Chinese translation, and that there are groups in Africa of young readers and groups in South America. I think we are a far cry from where we were 50 years ago.
Oh, we are indeed, Marty.
And I think
we
if you draw that trend line and you extend it out 100 years, I think actually we're on track. And the angels are working hard. And I think if you extrapolate where we are now, where we've come from, where we are now, and where we will end up 100 or 200 years down the line, I think we actually will have the cultural impact we need to have with these new stories of what the universe is, what we are a part of, how we are loved, and the universal relationships we must have with each other across all national boundaries and cultural boundaries, and to really become one fellowship of humanity. I think it will happen. So I'm not discouraged, and I look around and I say to myself, you know, this thing is growing, and nothing's going to stop it. Nothing's going to stop it, I think.
No, nothing will stop the love of God. Nothing.
Yeah.
And, you know, isn't it apropos, friends, that we start out talking about how they minister to us, and we end up talking about how we minister to each other? I mean, it just seems like a natural progression. Where do we go from here? Well, here's where we go. We minister to each other in very real ways. And my hat's off to all of you, because I know all of you on the board, all of you listening who might listen to this podcast, most of you, many of you, but I know all of you on this call and all of you on this board right now, I know how hard you all have worked to get this word out. God is love, and that God is in you, and that you do have hope. I know how hard all of you have worked to restore the hope of someone who has lost it. I know this about you. You are ministers, because you've been touched by a revelation and you've been ministered to, and you crave to minister to others, because there is nothing more satisfying than to rekindle that light of hope in their hearts. And we all take that very seriously. I know that. And that's why we always come back around to that, because that's what we want so badly to do. We want to kindle the hope of humanity again, to know that there is something more. There's something more than what we see down here in this chaos.
Well, you know, Paula, I think it's no coincidence that we've just been reading, right, the Spirit of Divine Ministry. Is that what we've just read?
Yep.
And the next section is the presence of God. The Spirit is at work in us and in our movement.
Yes.
That's exactly
it
what
is.
They're telling us.
Mm-hmm. True,
right.
It is.
Yeah.
I see
yep.
it. I've seen it. I've seen it
yep.
evolve from that place where we were afraid to say anything and we're not good enough to where it is now, and it's quite something, really.
Mm-hmm.
We've risen to the occasion, I think, and we will keep rising, and I have faith in that. And man, my heart is full for all of you. You know, I have always felt like it's my job to encourage everybody to just do what they feel called to do, because that's how the Spirit moves, and it moves uniquely through each of us. And I just think, man, I love us. Wow.
Yeah.
You know, we all got to do something. That's the spirit of action, right? There's the conjoined actor right there, moving us to act. There we go. The game is on, as we said earlier.
Yeah. Well, we've made
do
it to
what
our last
you
minute.
Do, go where you want to go. Do what you want to do.
Oh, man. Well, thank you, guys. What a wonderful conversation. What a wonderful section from the book.
Yes.
Wow.
Thank
Andre
you.
Read it, and my heart just swelled. Tears started flowing
yes.
down my face.
Yes.
So next week, we're off to Personality of the Infinite Spirit, and I'm sure it's going to be another great conversation. And thanks, you guys, for joining us. Thanks for being on the board with us. We love you. We'll see you next week.
Wonderful to be
it's
here with you
pleasure.
All.
Yeah.
All right.
Wonderful
I'm
indeed.
Good.
Thank you, Paula. I love you guys.
Yeah,
thank
love
you.
You guys.
Love you too.
Thanks so much.
Have a great week.
Yep. Bye for now.
Bye for now.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Cosmic Citizen, a radio program focused primarily on the study and discussion of the Urantia Book and its teachings. The Urantia Book is a religious text that claims to be written by angels and other superhuman personalities. If you are a Urantia Book reader or a spiritual seeker looking for new truth, we hope and pray you have been nourished and edified by our ministry. Please remember that the views expressed on this program do not reflect the official views and opinions of any Urantia organizations. There is no official interpretation of the Urantia Book. So all opinions expressed on this program exclusively reflect the personal biases of the hosts, guests, and callers who participate in these discussions. And remember, only a brave person is willing honestly to admit and fearlessly to face what a sincere and logical mind discovers.